But now we're going to talk technology. And if you've got a question, do join in. If you've got a point to make, 0345 6060 973, text 84850. And joining us on the line is Fevzi Turkalp, who's the editor of GadgetDetective.com. Morning, Fevzi. Hang on, we've got to fade him up first. Nick's on the phone. Here we go. He's doing all the jobs at the moment.
I know. Good morning.
Morning. I don't know whether you've got a view on the NHS technology. And this comment about, we've just been talking about what the NHS needs and this idea that it used to be Blockbusters and now it needs to be Netflix. Do you think there is a sort of tech point here that it needs to move with the times?
Yeah, there is, because if you remember a couple of years back when the NHS was subject to an attack, computer attack on its systems, part of the reason why it was attacked was because it was still running Windows 7 machines and earlier, and they weren't adequately patched and protected. So and it's not surprising in a way, because it's such a huge organization that, you know, there will be a sort of rolling program of upgrading machines. I mean, a lot of ATM machines are still running Windows XP, for example. There is a tech point to it. The other thing is that we've seen evidence that rather than develop some of the technologies that they need, the AI-type technologies that they need for things like diagnosis in-house, that they were caught doing secret deals with companies like Google, where they would effectively trade our medical data.
Oh,
do you remember?
Yes, yes.
In exchange for access to the benefits of Google's research. But it was a secret deal, and some people doubted its legality. So that sort of project is very important, because things like diagnosis depends upon it, you know, artificial intelligence and big data. And you know, the NHS is full of big data, right? It's got loads of data about us. But they really shouldn't be bartering it off. They should be developing those systems in-house. So I think that, you know, there are unsurprisingly a lot of technological issues with the NHS.
The irony is, of course, a lot of us, especially when it was difficult to get to see a doctor, and still is, we turn to Dr. Google and look up our symptoms and look for answers online. I imagine tech is, in a way, it is the future of medicine.
Well, yes, and also a lot of people have turned to digital GP services, where you know, commercial organisations, and that's also a little bit risky, because, you know, I heard someone saying before, you know, it's only a matter of time before one of the big boys moves into health, and in fact they're already doing it. You know, Google's bought Fitbit, for example, and there's lots of examples of that. Apple's major push these days is in the health and fitness market. So, you know, it's dangerous, because you've got these devices that track your heart and your activity level and all these bits of very personal information about your health.
Yeah.
How long before an insurance company buys one of these companies and then you start getting denied insurance for certain things because of your health data?
Running an ECG on your phone. That's a very good point. Now, we're going to focus particularly in the next half an hour on mobile phones. There's a couple of interesting developments on that, and already getting some questions in on phones. If you any tech question is welcome, but we're going to particularly look at mobiles this morning. If you want some advice, then do call 0345 6060 973 or text 84850. Any other tech questions, welcome as well. We'll do our best to squeeze it all in. And I wanted to mention, first of all, on the mobile phone front, we had this news this week. The EU, they've been talking about it for a while, haven't they? But they're now saying all mobile phone chargers have got to use the same connection to save waste. Is that a good idea?
Yeah, so it's a provisional agreement by the EU, and they're saying by autumn 2024 that mobile phones, initially mobile phones, but eventually this will extend to laptops as well, by the way, but that mobile phones must by autumn 2024 use USB-C connections in order to charge themselves. So, you know, there are different types of connectors. There are proprietary connectors like Apple's Lightning. Then there are the old USBs like micro USB and mini USB, which are, you know, essentially the same thing, but different connectors on the end. And most recently, there is USB-C, which is a sort of oval type connector. And that is a good choice at the moment. I mean, it has a lot of technological advantages other than just standardizing. Standardizing itself has its benefits. But you know, USB-C is a very advanced connector, and it's not just because you have a USB-C physical connector, that doesn't mean that you can't have different types of technology running over that connection, and we already do. You know, so for example, you get various types of USB, but you also get Thunderbolt connections running over it. You also get video links running over it. So the fact that they have to use a USB-C thing as a charger is not in and of itself a problem. Two things, though. One is that if the EU is going to get into this game of telling companies what type of connectors to have, then they're going to have to keep up to date with that, because although USB-C is a good solution now, it may not always be.
We still might end up with lots of different chargers then.
Well, we will do, because one of the movements in charging technology is towards wireless charging, and not all wireless charging technologies are compatible with one another. So you get a charging pad from one manufacturer and a phone from another, and although they are both wireless charging capable, they may not work together. So they're going to have to, you know, having made a rod for their own back by bringing in this sort of legislation, they're going to have to keep on top of it and make sure that their guidance or rules make sense.
Now, the other story that's been in the news this week has been about the UK's competition watchdog really suggesting that Apple and Google are dominating. They've got a stranglehold on mobile browsers, and that there's a lack of competition. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that? And do you think that it's best to stick with these big names, or do you recommend people to venture further away from Apple and so on?
Well, I mean, it's quite interesting. So this is the Competition and Markets Authority, as you say, it's a competition watchdog in the UK. So they've highlighted browsers, so Apple's Safari browser and Google's Chrome browser that come installed as the default browser on the relevant devices, although you can change them on each of those devices, you're not stuck with that browser, and also the app stores. Okay, so this is quite a finessed argument. You know, there's something to what they're saying, but they must be careful not to go too far down this line. I would say, although they're saying Apple and Google are a duopoly, their business models are very different. So Apple is a completely proprietary organization. It makes its own hardware and it makes the software that runs on it, and you either choose to buy Apple or you don't. That's up to you. Google is different because Google, although it makes mobile phones, it has, you know, the Google Pixel mobile phones. The majority of instances of Google's operating system are found on third parties' phones. So, you know, Samsung, for example, will run Google's Android operating system. Now, there is then a contract between those companies which is quite restrictive, because Google says, okay, you can have the operating system for free to run on your hardware, but you have to have certain apps installed. You mustn't have certain other apps installed. We have to have rights to the data that these apps collect. Okay, which is why they do it. You know, I mean, Google is not a charity. So I think what Google is doing, I mean, although both Apple and Google are in a powerful position, I think what Google is doing is more questionable in my view, because it involves arguably restrictive agreements with third-party companies, whereas Apple is just doing its own thing and setting its own rules. That said, if you look at the question of app stores, you know, there is an argument to be made that the 30% commission on that Apple charges manufacturers of apps is too high. There is an argument to say that not allowing them to bill outside the system and therefore avoid the 30% is restrictive. So those things, I think, can be tweaked. That said, one of the reasons I buy Apple hardware when I do is because of the walled garden that Apple put up, and the fact that because they control the App Store and there's only one App Store, I know that Apple do their best to check for those apps to be safe. They vet them before they go up, and they control what goes on the devices. Now, that, you know, you can call that restrictive, but you can also call it, you know, safety. I feel safer. I am safer by having that situation. Google, on the other hand, who have the Google Play Store, which is their version of the App Store, they don't do the same level of checking of apps before they go up, and they rely on people to spot problems with apps and then after the event maybe take them down. And again, I think that makes people less secure. So you pay your money, you take your choice. But I think it's not right to just, you know, the CMA's approach is a little bit simplistic, and I think they need to take a more finessed view of this.
Yes, you should have a word with them, I think, FFC. Now, we've got loads of questions coming in, so we're going to do the headlines, and we'll come back with lots of questions for FFC Turkout. Get your questions in for FFC Turkout. We're talking about tech, and here's a question for you, FFC, from Chris. He says, I believe there's a new type of battery will be released soon using new technology, so phones will last 3 or 4 days again. Any ideas when this will be?
I mean, there's actually quite a few new technologies being worked on at the moment, and at the moment some of those improvements are in practice only incremental. I think we will get back to those sort of 3 or 4 day battery life things, because what's happening is that the performance of mobile phones is becoming more efficient. They are sort of doing more, and they have sort of neural engines and all this sort of thing built into the chips. But at the same time, they're more energy efficient. So, for example, you know, you get iPads, which are, you know, essentially like big mobile phones, with, you know, their latest M1 processor, which is the same processor that they fit in their desktops and laptop computers, and they're very, very energy efficient. So you'll see two things. You'll see improvements in battery technology, which will continue on, but you'll also see improvements in the efficiency of the chips and therefore the amount of energy they draw, and both of those are essential. I'm not sure that we're going to see any leaps forward, you know, huge leaps forward in the next, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, you know how it goes. We eke the last amount we can out of sort of lithium ion battery technology, and then a new technology takes over. I mean, there's experimentation with hydrogen fuel cells and so forth, but it's not easy to, you know, package that in a way that's a practical technology.
And while we're on batteries, Kath, I don't know whether you got any ideas on this one. I need a new battery for my mobile Samsung GT, GPRS dual band. Where can I find one? I'm 68 and I've got no computer. Where do you go for a phone battery?
Well, so most mobile phones these days don't have a user replaceable battery. It used to be the case that almost every mobile phone you could pop the cover off it or the back off it and swap out the battery. People even used to take a spare battery with them. For the most part, that's not possible. For those devices where it is still possible, and there are still a few where you can buy a battery yourself and fit it yourself, I would say, although you can go on places like well-known auction websites, I think it's one of those areas.
But she hasn't got a computer.
Yeah, and I'm not suggesting you do. I mean, I think it's a question of going into a high street dealership perhaps, or at least telephoning your high street dealer, perhaps where you bought it from, or someone who sells that brand, and ask them, you know, what is the cost of ordering one, and they'll be able to tell you also if your phone is one where the battery can be replaced or whether you're going to have to send it in. If you have to send it in, it gets more expensive because, first of all, they control which part they fit, and also they're going to charge you for it. And it sometimes gets to a point, if the phone wasn't very expensive in the first place and it's, you know, let's say 4 years old, 5 years old, it might not even be a cost-effective thing to do, which is a disgrace, you know, for a battery to make obsolete a phone. But sometimes that is the case.
But if the battery is available, if it's one of those phones where you can put one in, then presumably a phone shop you would go to, or ring up the manufacturer.
Yeah, or you could ring up the manufacturer. Okay. But, you know, I'd start with a phone shop because their number will be easier to find and see if they're willing to be helpful to you. And you can also find out what a similar phone would cost to buy new, or because I don't know if our listener has, you know, is on a contract or anything, but it may be that they're entitled to a new handset already.
That's a point. Right, let's take a couple of calls. Tallulah in Watford. Hello, Tallulah.
Hello.
What's your question?
Okay, I've got a Chromebook which is about to run out, and I was asked to do an update. And then it said, now we do a last update. What is that all about?
So a Chromebook shouldn't really need updating as such, because it's essentially it's a browser. You know, and all the apps that you run on a Chromebook. So it's not like a conventional computer where you install applications like a word processor and so forth. Everything runs in a browser. So the majority of updates that Chromebooks require are not done on the actual Chromebook itself. They're done on the server side, on the far end, if you like. So they update the software that you're running in your browser. There are some, you know, basic updates that can be done with Chromebooks, but they should be quite straightforward and they should be automatic. So, Frank, I'm not sure about the message you're getting, because the whole point of a Chromebook is it's extremely low maintenance. You know, it's
for it's about the automatic updates. They run out in 2022.
I understand. Okay. Well.
Okay.
So if the automatic updates run out and there are no updates available for your device after that date, the danger is that if there are flaws in the software, effectively the browser operating system that a Chromebook runs, if there are flaws in that that are security flaws, then they won't get patched or fixed. So you could start to have security problems. I think you need to perhaps look into, you know, what is the situation when they're saying you there's no automatic updates. Are they saying that there'll be no security updates for it, in which case there could be security problems? How old is the Chromebook, by the way?
Not really that old. It's running, it's a Acer Chromebook 14, which is not really that old. Mm-hmm. And I've done a mega update just let's say a month ago, mm-hmm. and then it says, and that is my actual question, no, it's the last update, and I wonder why I have to do an update after an update.
Well, updates can come at any time. I mean, if they discover you know, a zero-day flaw, which is a bug that was previously unknown but is being used by criminals, then they can do an update, you know, 2 days in a row if need be, and that's a good thing. You know, normal day-to-day updates may be grouped together and done monthly or quarterly, but security updates should be fixed as soon as they're able to and as soon as they're aware of them. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. I would be more concerned about, are they going to provide you with security updates after, you know, after this one? And if not, you know, the risk to you is less in that we're talking about updates to a very basic operating system. But still, it's still possible to have bugs in Chrome OS that can give rise to security problems. And that, I think that's one of the problems with, you know, a lot of these machines, is how long do we have a reasonable expectation that they will last? Apple, you know, tends to give you updates for about 5-6 years, depending on the device, which is, you know, pretty good. But still, you know, at the end of 5 or 6 years, I noticed, for example, that the iPhone 7 series was effectively obsoleted with the announcement of iOS 16, which is coming in the autumn, in that it's not going to run it. And it's not clear whether those users of, you know, iPhone 7 and 6S, which are a few years old, but were sold as recently of about 3 years ago, I think, they may not get the security updates, which renders them obsolete, in my view.
All right, Tallulah, thank you very much for that. Now, just to give you some advance warning, we'll come back in a moment, Fevzi, and I've got a lot of questions, and I'll try and summarise them into one. But people are asking for advice for buying a smartphone, but they don't want anything very expensive or fancy, and they don't want an Apple. They want some possible brand names or models for an Android-type phone that is fairly simple to use for people who maybe not even had a smartphone before, mm-hmm. and it isn't expensive. So I'll just leave that with you, and maybe we'll come back with some answers in a moment. But we're talking about technology and mobile phones at the moment with Fevzi Turkalp here from GadgetDetective.com. You can also find him on Twitter at GadgetDetective. And I want to get some advice. We've had several texts and tweets on wanting advice on buying a new mobile phone, upgrading to something a little bit better. And Nick's listening to this as well, because he's still on an old Nokia, which is black and white and doesn't have any emojis on it. So he can't even understand if you send him a little symbol or something. It just comes up with what does it come up with? Just figures or a blank box. Yeah, yeah, sadly. And he is perfectly happy with it. He can get by. He doesn't want to be on the grid, you see. However, a lot of people do. So just to give you a flavour of these questions, AJ says, could you give us some advice on moving from my decade-old phone to one that shows moving images? You're hearing this, Nick. Cheap and dirt simple to use, please. Another one here, Sandy says, which mobile brands are the best in your opinion for a mid-range Android phone? I'm about to get a new mobile phone after using my iPhone for 5 years. I want to switch to Android.
Mm-hmm.
Another one here, recommend a good phone, top budget, £250. Don't need gaming, just good photos, videos and a bit of net surfing. So that roughly in the same area. What's your buying advice?
Okay, so Android mobile. So we're talking about Android because
yes.
The Apple stuff is not cheap even at its entry level, and not £250 certainly. So with Android, I mean, you can go as cheap as about £60 for reasonably good Android smartphone. There's one in particular that I was looking at recently. It's called the IMO Q4 Pro, and it's available. I think it's only available in this country via Tesco Mobile, but you can buy it for about £60.
Wow!
And it's a fully functional smartphone. I mean, obviously, it's not going to be a speed demon, and the screen is not going to be, you know, perfect, but more than good enough. And for people who are updating from a much older phone, then it's going to be a very substantial step up. And because it's Android, you've still got things like Google Assistant in there. So you've got voice control, which can be helpful in both setting up the phone, but also in interacting with it. So I think that's quite good. If you're looking for a phone, if you've got a person who's really, for example, not very tech savvy, then the people who are sort of specialise in those sorts of phones are a company called Doro, D-O-R-O, and they make both feature phones, i.e. non-smartphones, like things like flip phones and, you know, more basic phones, which might, you know, give you the basic functions but won't give you all that you can do with a smartphone. But for some people, that's what they want. And the Doro phones are good for that. But they also do a range of smartphones like the 8080, the 8050, the 8100, which are not only Android smartphones, but they have a layer of software on top from Doro, which lets you set up the phone by answering, you know, questions in English, you know, so you don't have to understand much about the technology. It will ask you a series of questions, and that will allow you to set it up. And also, Doro have software that allows a trusted loved one to set up your phone for you, or if you mess up the settings on it, allows them to go in and correct it for you. Of course, you must only do that with someone that you really trust, you know, in terms of giving them access to your device. But that's a good thing. I mean, Apple have that feature as well, but obviously we're talking about, you know, more affordable phones. In terms of other brands, I mean, Samsung for mid-range phones are good, although they have the really sort of expensive high-end, you know, Galaxy S22s. They do, you know, good quality mid-range phones, and I think there's a lot to be said for, you know, going for the market leader. There are a lot of these other sort of Chinese and, you know, Taiwanese, Korean brands. So you've got things like Motorola's Moto series, the you've got the Xiaomi, the spelled XIOMI, so you've got Xiaomi Poco X3, which is an affordable phone. You've got OnePlus as a good brand as well at the budget end, so you've got things like the OnePlus 10 Pro, for example, and you've got other brands that people might not be familiar with but are gaining traction, like Realme, R-E-A-L-M-E. They do a range of phones that tend to be sort of budget to upper mid-range, but things like OnePlus and Realme and Xiaomi, you know, obviously, you know, Chinese brands, but good value for money. You know, they give you a lot of bang for your buck, as it were. So it depends what you want. Just be aware that although they all run Android, one of the sort of differentiators between different brands is the support that you get from them. And obviously, you know, if you're paying £60 for a phone, you're not likely to get the same level of support as if you pay more or pay for a phone from a more, you know, mainstream brand, let's say. So that's something to consider as well. Okay. You're not just buying the hardware, you're buying the support.
Dave has just texted to say, try Blackview. I just got one after my old Nokia Relic. I'm very impressed. They're a sort of fairly affordable Android as well.
Yeah, so I haven't tried one of their phones, but it is actually quite difficult to keep up with even the brands that are springing up, much less the models. It is quite incredible. And I think the reason for that is what we're seeing, and particularly with Android phones, is that they're becoming commodity items. It's more like buying a toaster than a computer. You know, that they will all do, you know, the basics.
Yeah.
You know, some of them will do stuff.
So you certainly can get a perfectly reasonable phone for about £100.
Oh yeah,
or less.
Yeah,
okay,
I would say so.
Lawrence is in Barnet. Hello, Lawrence.
Morning.
Morning. What would you like to say?
A website, online forum for speakers, headsets, etc., where you can get the reliable information. Because there was a time you could go to a shop and, you know, listen to the speakers and so on and decide then. But now, the vast majority of these speakers are online, you know. So rather than buying them and then sort of go through the whole process of sending them back, etc., I just wondered if there's a forum where you can get good information. Obviously, these things are very subjective, but there's some basic sort of sets of facts that you should be able to get from these forums.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the problem... It's a good question. The problem with forums is that they're full of what's called user-generated content, which means that anyone can put their sixpence worth in, and it's a discussion. And you can learn from forums, but you kind of need a certain level of knowledge to be able to filter the wheat from the chaff. And that's a problem. I still think one of the best ways of getting information about products is to, obviously, you still go online, but to look for the online presence of well-established titles, often, you know, technology magazines that exist as paper magazines, but also produce most of their content online for free. There is, you know, if you've got respected journalists who've been doing this for a while and are, you know, for example, if you were talking about computers, PC Pro magazine, for example, is an excellent publication, and they have a very strong online presence. And you know, I'm not quite sure, they won't thank me for saying it, I'm not quite sure why people still buy the paper version, because the online contains pretty much all of it. So that's, you know, that's a good way of doing it. The other thing is, you know, obviously some of these online magazines are not free and you have subscriptions. There is a subscription based model for magazines called Readly. That's Readly. And what you do is you pay them, I think it's about £6 or £7 a month, and they usually have deals. And then you have access to, I think, hundreds or literally thousands of different titles and all the back issues, and they're all searchable as well. And because they are things that are going into magazines, they're much more likely to give you quality information, particularly things like product reviews and just articles about technologies and so forth. There is a certain quality standard that the internet as a whole is tiger country, and you know, the irony is that you have to know something in order to be told, in order to be able to discern when you're receiving bad information, because some of it is very well presented, you know, pictorially, but actually isn't very good. So I would say go, you know, have a look at PC Pro online if you're talking about that. Consider Readly. I think you can get a free subscription for a month or two from them usually. It's a good way of looking on, and you can switch that subscription on and off as well. And I think that's a great way of doing it, because you get all... I used to, yeah, back in the day, I used to buy technology magazines, and I had to go, because they were taking up so much space and were so expensive, I'd have to, every time something got to 6 months old, I'd have to cut out the articles I wanted and scrap the rest. And it was an awful process, and trying to find things again and index them in a way, you know, to get that information. But that's where I, you know, cut my teeth, as it were, before I was reviewing products and getting my knowledge that way. So, but I would say go for online versions of magazines for quality.
Sounds a good plan. Lawrence, thank you. Let's squeeze in a quick one with Jason in Perth. Hello, Jason.
Jason, quite a pleasure.
Hi.
My very simple question is, like, I actually sell phones for a living, mm-hmm. and I actually think that the Android platform is immensely confusing for people that might want to maybe invest in a smartphone. Mm-hmm. I think that Apple, like, I have an Apple phone and also have an Android phone, but Apple is completely ring-fenced. And I would like to ask the gentleman, I mean, I think Android can be quite confusing because you can purchase the actual handset, but you have the Android platform, and it can be happily corrected here, but you can have a Google phone or a Motorola, but there's a lot of very differences of how Android works because you've got one UI. And compared to Apple, I mean, I've got loads of sort of people that say to their, like, to their elderly, just get an iPhone, because the reason why is that all their sort of their grandkids anyone else have it, so they can work with it. I'm not saying that Android isn't wrong, but Android is a very platform, though.
It's an interesting point.
So with Apple, you get fewer choices in terms of the form factor of the hardware. You know, if you want a phone that folds over and opens out into a big screen, you can't currently buy that. Buying Android gives you a much wider range of devices to choose from, which is, you know, in one sense good, but puts an onus on the buyer to know what to buy. And also, because the hardware is made from by a different company than Google, except for the Pixel phones made by Google, then it doesn't always match it perfectly. And then you've got different manufacturers putting their own layers of software. So Samsung do a version of Google's Android, which, you know, because they try and differentiate themselves, you know, because if they're all running exactly the same software, then it's harder for them to sell the differences. So they try and differentiate themselves, but that's not always a good thing either. Sometimes they just clog up the phone and make it run less well and ensure that it doesn't get updates for as long, because it's not just that Google has to produce the new version of Android, but then Samsung has to be willing to do their version of that version.
All of which makes it slightly more complicated for the novice and sometimes the less familiar or older family members buying phones, I would suspect.
It does, yeah.
Exactly. And some people are saying, well, there's an iPhone SE, for example, that is a sort of entry-level phone, but still more expensive than your £100.
Yeah, but I Android is very important and it fulfills an important, you know, role in, otherwise you'd have, you know, a monopoly by Apple. But I do think I've had experiences where I've had issues with, you know, AppleCare, and I've had, you know, one of their tech people who are admittedly of more variable quality than they used to, but spend 2 hours on the phone with me talking through a problem and think nothing of it and tell you to, you know, ring back if you have anything.
Get what you pay for,
in a sense, yeah.
All right, well, Fevzi, thank you. Now, we've had so many questions that we haven't been able to answer, but if you want to get in touch with Fevzi, you can get him on Twitter at Gadget Detective, and I'm sure that you'll be willing to offer some more advice on Twitter, I expect.
If anyone wants to message me through Twitter, that would be fine.
Okay, great to have you on. Thank you very much. Apologies if you were waiting and didn't get around to your question, but we squeezed in as many as we can. That's Fevzi Turkup from GadgetDetective.com.